another episode of the Noisecast. This week I am once again joined by Paul. Paul, say hello to everyone.
Hey, all you adoring fans.
All 10 of you, thank you for tuning in and downloading and subscribing. Seriously, you know, thank you all of you who check out for us, who come through, who drop little notes on our Twitter and our Instagram. That's actually a new one, getting the messages in the Instagram feed. So I have to do better to check those more frequently. So thank you guys for checking us out. So a lot's been going on. Paul, it's been about a month since we last recorded. I know last week I put out a couple of different interviews that were part of Photo Plus Week here in New York City. What's going on with you?
Just been busy, man. I work retail. This time of year is a bitch, to say the least. And I'm already ready for the holidays to be over, and they just began.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that if someone plays All I Want for Christmas Is You, you're probably going to kill them.
No, I've just heard it so much already. Like, Thanksgiving isn't here yet, and I've probably heard that song 40 damn times already.
Yeah, so, a full disclosure, I actually love that song. Yeah, like, that's like the only Christmas... Well, no, that's one of two Christmas songs that I can tolerate.
No, well, it's not that I don't like it. Walmart actually plays a decent amount of music I do like. It's just the overexposure. Like, I've probably heard that High Hope song from Panic at the Disco 4,000 times by this point.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally hear you. It's definitely one of those things where, you know, working retail is a good way to make you mad about literally everything. So, you know, we'll keep you in our thoughts, Paul, and everyone who's listening. Be nice to the people who work in retail. They don't want to be there any more than you want to be there. So until Amazon completely takes over the rest of the country, be nice to retail employees.
Obligatory fuck Amazon.
So, you know, the last time we talked, we had some high hopes about a bunch of things. One of the things that we were really looking forward to was Google Stadia. And, you know, just to kind of recap it for anyone who might not be familiar, Google Stadia is Google's first quote-unquote console. And I say quote-unquote console because it's not really a console so much as it's a cloud-based gaming on-demand type service. So the concept is pretty straightforward. The Stadia, like, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, I believe the primary hardware here is the Google Chrome Ultra, the Stadia controller, and that's it, right?
That's really it. It's spent $130 on the Founder Edition for that. And I guess it's also the fact that you get early access to what is another one of Google's betas.
Yeah. Yeah, you're paying to be first in, essentially.
And I've been a beta tester with other Google products. I was a beta tester for Google Plus. I was a beta tester for Gmail back long time ago. But frankly, I actually just have no interest in being a beta tester for this. What about you?
Yeah. So I'm not going to lie. At $130, I said this is pretty much an impulse buy. And had not some unforeseen bills popped up, I probably would have pre-ordered mine. That being said, I'm pretty confident that I dodged a $130 bullet. In large part, not because there's anything wrong with the Stadia, at least not, you know, not on its face. I think the concept is still very interesting. It's, you know, as someone who does not like to keep up with PC builds anymore, you know, the ability to play AAA games at quote-unquote full resolution sounds great. Regardless of what hardware you may have laying around, But unfortunately, you know, there are just too many like misses that I can think of with the Google Stadia as it is today. So, you know, let me, before I start tearing into it, like, there are some really cool things. And we were talking earlier, like, there's a lot of potential that the console has. And, you know, for me, those things are like, no wait downloads, right? So you purchase the game, you select the game, you start playing. You don't have to wait, you know, an hour, 30 minutes to download software to then install it and then download a whole bunch of patches. Like, honestly, that shit's for the birds. It's one of the most frustrating things about gaming today. At least for me, it is. I know when I purchased, what was the last game that Borderlands. Like, Borderlands, I didn't buy a disc. I downloaded it from the PlayStation store, and I wasted maybe 2 hours before I was able to play anything.
I completely agree with you on that. Last time I purchased a game was Doom, actually. I did and I had to wait probably 3 hours because it was, by the time I downloaded an update to my PlayStation 4, downloaded the game, downloaded the updates to the game, it was a nightmare. And I definitely like the idea of just being able to, hey, pop right into the game. But at the moment, the game selection just isn't there. Like, what do gamers want more than a good selection of games?
I think, you know, and kind of to that point, I think one of the biggest problems, so it's just like, officially there are 22 titles that are available for Stadia right now. And out of the 22, only one has not been released on another competitor's console for less than, you know, I believe like most of them have been out there pretty much for anywhere from 4 months to a year. So, you know, like, what are you really playing?
And the consoles are so entrenched by this point. You're going to have to really get something for people to be like, hey, I'll try something new. People mm-hmm. take their gaming very seriously. Like, even me, I'll admit, I'm a diehard PlayStation guy.
Okay. Like, we gotta start a Twitch channel, Paul.
I'm good. I don't know. I get nervous when people watch me game. Like, I've done this part 4,000 times, but if someone watches me, I'm going to screw up that time.
Oh man, I'm not good at gaming at all. If you're tuning in to see me on Twitch, it's to see me curse and like get frustrated.
I don't do that. I get frustrated. I just turn off the game. That's my problem.
Oh man, I'm in it for the compound. Cuss words. So, to just kind of going back to Stadia, and you know, like, I really want to highlight some of the positives, right? So, you know, we talked about in terms of like no wait to play. You purchase it or redeem the software, you jump right into it.
Well, I'm just thinking about the possibility of core demos. Like, mm-hmm. we've all been in a friend's house before and watched them do something really cool, like Tony Hawk Pro Skater or something back in the early 2000s.
Right.
And it's like, hey, you try this. So I can definitely think of the idea of that on YouTube, watching some YouTube personality like Markiplier or something play a specific part in a specific game, and you being able to just take right over at that part. Like, things mm-hmm. like that sound really cool. But it's going to be a while before we get there. So with Stadia, it's very much a wait and see point. It's like, wait and see if this pans out. And for a lot of the country, it may just not ever pan out for them at all.
Right. Like, one, you know, and that's kind of like one of the big, like the biggest thing that stands out to me as a big minus for the system is that it pretty much requires gigabit internet if you want to get the, you know, the full, the maximum possible resolution. You need a 4K HDR TV or monitor. You know, so right off the bat, we're talking about things that are like expensive. You know, there's no other way to say it. It's just like, you know, gigabit internet, it's not like, first of all, it's not even available in a a lot of metro markets. So for example, I live in Brooklyn, New York. We don't have gigabit internet. We have, I believe we top out at 300 megabits per second. So now granted, it works fine. I've never had any situation where I was playing a game online and, you know, things just suddenly stopped working unless there was an outage or an issue with my modem. But it's a very different thing when your, you know, your internet connectivity determines whether or not you have an actual game to play. I think that's where the consoles have consoles and, you know, PC gaming, anything that's local gaming beats out the Stadia at this point. There just isn't the type of infrastructure that's needed to make that viable for every single person.
Well, it does. And there's already so many competing services. Like the first one that came to mind is PlayStation Now, which is already available and has already kind of matured a bit.
Like, yeah, I noticed that actually. I was considering getting yet another subscription and doing that because like I feel like I don't buy games often enough where I'm picking up the newest title necessarily, but at the same time, I do want to play a little bit of everything. So,
yeah, exactly. So it kind of becomes a question of which your gamer is going to deviate to. Is it the console they know and love, like, for example, with PlayStation? Are they going to be willing to try Google's offerings? Because at this point, it kind of seems like PlayStation would do a better job kind of advertising PlayStation Now and give some people, existing PlayStation users, some incentives that I don't even think Stadia get off the launching platform.
Yeah, I think Xbox is actually doing something very similar to that idea. I think I am not entirely sure, but I did see a couple articles floating around that Microsoft is playing with the idea of essentially you buy a new console, you get the online service for 3 months. And honestly, like, it just, it's so hard to quit these things once you start it, and that's by design. So, like, you know, if Microsoft says, hey, you know, we're going to sell, you know, the latest Xbox at a significant discount, you know, $100 off, $150 off, and throw in, you know, 3 months of their on-demand gaming service, like, it becomes a tough sell to, you know, get an untested platform like Stadia.
Well, that being said, I can see the benefit of Stadia for some other games. Like, for example, there's a game I'm playing now called Outer Wilds. Mm-hmm. It came out a while ago, but it just now became available on the PlayStation. It was a computer game on Steam, and they had to do a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And my friends kept telling me how great it was, but my computer wasn't capable of it. I have a nice laptop, but it just has Intel graphics. It's just a touchpad. It's not intended for gaming. I wouldn't have got that experience. So the idea of just being able to hook up a Bluetooth controller and Stadia and being good to go still intrigues me. So that's why when the free tier of Stadia arrives, I'm definitely going to try it out. Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to the idea of Stadia. I just understand it as an uphill battle.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I think, you know, I think what's happening is that Google has positioned themselves in a place where they've kind of overpromised and underdelivered, and it's just going to see how people react to it. So, you know, I think the biggest, like, for most people, the New York Times, like, headline is pretty, you know, it's pretty damning. And it's not to say that it was a purely negative review of the Stadia, but they basically say the Stadia wants to replace your video game console, but don't.
And I think Stadia has to about the holiday of next year, and by that point, if it's not catching on, it's gone.
Realistically, you know, Stadia needs to have, I would say, anywhere from like 4 to 6 exclusive titles that will be Stadia only and that will draw people in, because that's really what's going to set them apart.
Because we're about to start seeing them compete with the PlayStation 5, for example, though, and that's gonna be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? It's like with things like PlayStation has its they have their own publishers, right? They have publishers that are gonna only work with you know the major consoles for some specific games, and that's what kind of keeps them. I guess relevant, right? Because, for example, with the PlayStation 4, the thing that really got me to buy the PlayStation 4 over the Xbox One was Street Fighter. Like Street Fighter was a PlayStation exclusive for I think the first month or 2 months.
And then I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. Street Fighter is what brought me in. I was like, oh, Street Fighter game is only available on PlayStation. Got it. That's what
God of War was what brought me in. So
yeah, so you know, like, so everybody has like one of these titles that they were just like, you know what, I don't know, maybe I'll go this way, maybe I'll go that way, but then you know, like, oh, I'm gonna have to buy this because this is the only place I could play this particular game. Like for example, for me, Zelda Breath of the Wild and Smash Brothers is enough for me to buy a Switch. Like, I'm going to play those games, even if it's the same game I'm playing, you know, for the millionth time. Like, it justifies the cost of me buying that console. There's nothing on Stadia right now that makes me say, you know what, $129 plus, you know, whatever much it costs me to be on your service per month is worth it.
And it's also just getting to the point where there's so many different things you have to pay for monthly, so many different things eating your bandwidth. Like Disney Plus just came out this week.
Yeah, that's an awesome segue, Paul. And I got to say, I bit the bullet. So let me just kind of start off with, yes, I paid the $70 to essentially have access to The Mandalorian. But where are you on it? Did you sign up?
Okay, here's the thing. I was going to,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't.
Okay.
And then I'm reading about all these issues, these kind of technical issues they're having, and it's made me probably, I'm going to bite the bullet. There's no denying that. I just for The Mandalorian. But the fact that it's weekly and episodic, it kind of gives me a little bit of a buffer. Where I'll probably wait till the first of the year, more episodes of The Mandalorian, give them more chance to get the issues worked out, and then I'll bite the bullet.
Yeah, you know, that's not such a bad idea. So so I did sign up for it. I did kind of prepay for the year, but I've all but canceled my subscription in large part because of the tech issues. So the biggest thing for me is I like to watch TV in my living room on my smart TV. I have a Samsung, you know, 4K smart TV. But there's no Disney Plus app as of this recording. There's no Disney Plus app. In fact, I think Disney Plus is only available on the Amazon Fire. And I think the Apple TV, you know, so I don't have either one of them, which means that the only way I'm going to enjoy a bigger screen experience is by essentially mirroring my Chrome browser onto my television. And that's a lot of work for something that's supposed to be entertainment.
And when you do that, it's just buggy as hell. I've done that so many times, and it's always a workaround, and it's obvious it's a workaround.
Yeah, it's not a fun experience. And, you know, to your point, it almost always will drop. Like, it's never, you know, the computer can be plugged into my router, and without a doubt, it will drop. It will lose connection to that television. Guaranteed.
And I know I'm one of the few people that's still like a fan of The Simpsons, but I legitimately enjoy The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
And the aspect ratio problems with Disney Plus is making it where I want to wait till they get that much fixed.
Yeah. Oh man, that sucks, man. Like you're so right. It's such a jarring thing when you see it. You don't think about it, and you think it doesn't make much of a difference until you're watching it. You're that's a smart move, man. Like, I would wait, especially if you love The Simpsons like that. I would wait.
And there's also been some issues with, like, some subtle changes to shows and stuff on Disney Plus.
I heard something about that. What's up with that?
I don't know the details, but there's an animated show that some friends were talking about. I can't remember the name of, but they were removing logos on, like, character shirts and characters' hats and things like that.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then they removed some episodes from The Simpsons.
I wonder why.
Well, I get that, but it just brings the question, like, as streaming media progresses and as it gets to the point where less and less people use physical media, it's like, did these episodes really exist if we can't watch them?
Yeah, no, that's true. I think, you know, one of the biggest things that, you know, we are starting to see is that, you know, what's happening is that because it more and more studios are kind of getting into this position where they're controlling the distribution channels as well. They kind of it's like they're almost getting to a point where they can kind of retcon anything, right? So, you know, to your point, Disney, you know, purchased pretty much all of the Fox properties, including The Simpsons. And in doing that, they can decide, you know, what happened in the history of that show. So obviously, you know, Disney did what was in their best interest, which was to remove anything that was harshly critical of the Walt Disney Company. And, you know, anyone who's even casually watched The Simpsons knows that, you know, Disney was put on blast on multiple occasions. Everything from, you know, sweatshop labor onto, like, bad business practices. You know, not saying that Fox by any means is a better company, just that, you know, they were calling them out. And now, you know, that's gone, whether wholesale gone or very smartly edited out. I don't know. I don't like that part of streaming and this idea of, well, you got more content than you've ever had access to in your life. So therefore, you know, they're doing you a service. I don't necessarily subscribe to that either.
And there's also something coming out with, like, movie theaters and Disney. The Justice Department is going to make it where production companies and distributors are able to buy movie theaters.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, there was a rule in the 40s created to stop that. And the Department of Justice is now saying that it's something they may be looking to overturn.
Wow, that is...
So
that's going to be a problem.
It'll make it where they have even more power, because that's what Disney needs is more power. Or really anyone. Like, I don't want to just factor out Disney. You still have Paramount and Sony and everybody else.
Yeah. Well, Sony not so much these days, because, you know, they're up for sale, and I wouldn't be surprised if Disney turns around and buys them. but yeah, like, you know, yeah, it's interesting because you have NBC Universal. And I'm pretty sure they are not going to, if you gave any one of these conglomerates the opportunity to own every single distribution channel they could, they're not going to say no.
It's all about that vertical integration.
There you go. yeah, that's really going to suck. I really hope that that does not get overturned, because the truth is, you know, You watch way more movies than I do, and you take you take movie going very seriously. I tend to be more of, like, the popcorn flick guy. So really, like, you'll notice, you know, a world where studios are running movie houses, because a lot of the things that, you know, a lot of the stuff that gets a lot of critical acclaim doesn't make much in terms of box office numbers. And, you know, I could see those things being the first to go. what incentive does, you know, Disney or Warner have to, you know, even put up a show like Parasite, which I've heard is phenomenal.
Parasite is the best movie of the year.
Wow.
Hands really? Down. It is. Yes. It is. It is very much class consciousness. It shows the poor fighting the poor for the richer scraps.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I was drawn to it. I loved it. It was drawn by the same guy that done Snowpiercer and Okja. And it was a phenomenal movie. And you need to go see it.
Enough said. I will be looking into that. But yeah, you know, like, the truth is that a movie like that will not get distribution in this kind of, big three model, because that's essentially what we're getting into. It's going to be three main studios that own all distribution channels, and they will be the essential gatekeepers to whatever we see or don't see. So, yeah, you know, like, maybe, you know, something like Parasite makes its way to Netflix or some other streaming, channel, but the likelihood of it getting any kind of, like, national distribution in movie houses will probably not be very realistic. I'm pretty sure that if it wasn't the critical success that it has been, I doubt that it would have had more than a 2-week run in movie theaters.
Yeah, it's really hard to find some of these limited run movie theaters. I had to find Jojo Rabbit on a very specific day and things like that. And I'm still waiting to see Honey Boy.
Oh, wow.
That's a...
Yeah, like, so, you know, it's funny because, like, I've been very fortunate in that New York City still has enough of these kind of, like, art house movie theaters where, you know, it's not that difficult. But yeah, that does not sound like a good time.
We had one, but we it got bought out, unfortunately. So
yeah.
And we're gonna see more of that if this deal goes through. And I'm not even sure how I feel about movies being on streaming services. Streaming's becoming its own kind of wasteland with all these competing services. And
oh yeah, so you know the streaming landscape is. I remember seeing someone post something along like it's almost like it's cable without cable. It's like, no, it is cable without cable. You know,
how long until a service comes along and bundles them and you pay for it and it becomes just like paying for cable again?
Listen, I know no exaggeration. I have a funny feeling that your current cable provider will probably do that for you because you know, this time of year is about the time where I have to make my annual call to Optimum and tell them, hey, you guys raised my bill again. How do we go back to the old bill? And, you know, we do the whole song and dance where I tell them I'm going to cut off the service. And then they turn around and say, all right, well, here you go. You get, you know, your old rate for another year. You know, we'll do this thing in a year again. But this time I noticed that they had mentioned, that they're like, well, you know, if you only do streaming services, we have a box that we could sell you. We'll upgrade your internet connectivity, which I'm already maxed out on, so it doesn't make a difference. And you replace your boxes with this one box that's a router and a modem and everything all built in. And I'm like, yeah, like, nah, that sounds like cable all over again. I'm just having to pay multiple people.
Yeah, it's really becoming interesting. As we asked for the a la carte things, we ended up getting it. It was worse than we could have ever imagined.
Oh, I knew that nothing good was going to come from this. Like, you know, Netflix was good when it was competing with, like, say, HBO and Showtime and Cinemax. Netflix then started competing with network television. And that's when you saw where things were just like, oh, this is going to be a problem.
But at the same time, even disregarding the amount of services and the amount of cost and stuff, one thing that bothers me as a movie and television lover is just the amount of stuff to watch. Like, every streaming service has its own original content.
Yeah.
And some of it's just really damn good.
Yeah.
And there's no way I can watch it all, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, that's like the ultimate first world problem, but you know what? I'm right there with you. I haven't watched a lot of the quote-unquote good television, not for lack of trying, but just because there's so much of it.
It's so hard to be like... That's kind of actually why I'm going to miss like a show like Game of Thrones that's so much of a tentpole.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones may actually be like the last tentpole show we get like that, where everybody was watching it.
Oh, no, I'm sure there'll be another. There'll be another.
I don't know. There's just so many different streaming services that we're all subscribed to now and so many different shows. I don't know that another one will have that cultural impact now. I don't know that another one can have that cultural impact now.
You know what? I think it'll happen. It just won't happen. It won't happen on a Sunday night on your couch. I think it's going to be like the way we experience it will be different, but not necessarily the fact that there won't be another thing quite like it.
But it's interesting how the streaming landscape has changed media, because we've seen that time and time again throughout... like our entertainment history, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, the New York Times has a really good long form article on just how streaming, you know, how the streaming era is essentially going to upend Hollywood as we know it. So, you know, all the way that everything works has been essentially flipped upside down, where, you know, power sat with a handful of studios. It's now going to, you know, like every studio has kind of like clammed up and are trying to offer their own version of a streaming service. You know, HBO recently paid more money than what God has to, you know, for the privilege of showing you Friends on their streaming service.
And they paid an obscene amount of money for South Park too, I think.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I'll be honest with you, I hate Friends. Let me just really, really put that out there. I can't stress it enough. I hate Friends.
You know, I tried to rewatch it recently, and it is so bad. It is so bad.
Friends is terrible. Like, everybody on that show was bad. They were bad people.
But what's interesting about it is you're seeing movies like even these big tentpole directors like Martin Scorsese now directing films for Netflix as opposed to doing the traditional cinema route.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? That's one of the things that I think is interesting in the sense that, so, you know, we were talking about movies like Parasite, where I probably should watch it. I do want to watch it, but I am not entirely sure if I'll get to watch it in the theater. But
you don't have to watch it in theater. I will tell you that, but it deserves to be watched soon. Just watch it where I can talk to you about it.
Okay, yeah. But, you know, like with Scorsese, like he has like the Irishman. Is that what it is?
Yes, it is. And I am really excited for it.
It looks like a phenomenal movie. I probably will go watch it. The other one, the Adam Sandler movie, I believe that's also backed by Netflix, right? Uncut Gems?
I'm honestly not sure the distribution on that. That one's kind of weird. It's getting a theatrical release, whereas... The Irishman's only getting like a very a select theater just to be eligible for the Oscars.
Right.
Whereas Uncut Gem is actually getting distributed.
Oh, okay. But like you know, again, we talk about how streaming services are absolutely making a muck of like the traditional Hollywood model. Like, I think that kind of like encapsulates it right there. The Irishman is only getting distribution for an Oscars run, and Uncut Gems is getting distribution, but I'm almost positive that Netflix essentially paid for that movie.
That part I'm unsure of, but I'm actually really excited for Uncut Gems. The trailer looks phenomenal, and Adam Sandler is a remarkably talented actor.
Oh, he just
most of the time chooses not to. Which I honestly can't say I blame him. Like, if I had the option to either work hard or go have a vacation with my friends and make the easiest movie possible, I know which I would choose.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Listen, if you could pay me to goof off, I will.
Like Uncut Gems looks like a lot harder movie than whatever he did with Jennifer Aniston a couple months ago.
Right. And you know what though? Like, I gotta say that I'm actually happy for him, to be honest. I was just like, you know what? Like, go out there, like, make the movies you want, and you know, just be good. Just make the most out of it. Have fun. And then if you want to make a really, you know, like, if you want to show your acting chops, then yeah, you could totally do it.
So you talking about all the movie theaters, what's the last movie you saw in theaters?
Oh, I just saw Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, you saw that too? Awesome. I saw it last night.
What did you think about it?
Christian Bale and Matt Damon has some surprisingly great chemistry on screen together.
Right? Like, they like, you know what kills me? Every single time I see Christian Bale, he completely embodies his character. Like, I no longer see Christian Bale. I see that character. Does that make sense to you? Like,
No, you're completely right, because I saw Vice recently. He looked so much like Dick Cheney, it was ridiculous. I just feel bad for Christian Bale's body.
Oh man, like, there's no way that I could do anything like that. That is nuts, man.
But I didn't know anything about the real story of Ford and Ferrari and why they had that they have such a rivalry, and that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so like, you know, I think if you're a car guy, right? Like, you know, you were by default gonna go see it, and you know, you instantly start making the comparisons with other car, you know, great car movies. What's the one that comes to mind?
Fast and the Furious.
No. It was a biopic as well. Shit. Oh, you're right there.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's Senna. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not. I've actually never been big, and I'm not a super big car guy, and I've never been really into car movies. I saw this one mainly, truthfully, because of the cast, and it did have a phenomenal trailer.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, like, Senna is considered pretty much, like, the car movie. So it revolves around... So basically, you know, this isn't going to ruin anything because it's based on this guy's life, Ayrton Senna, and he dies at the end. He dies in the middle of a race. It's a big crash. It's such a good movie though. Like, the entire time you feel like you are right there with him. So, you know, it's definitely, I can't really describe it, but it's just a visceral movie. Like, you literally feel that you're there the entire time. You're like living this man's life.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm probably gonna check that out just because I'm always down for a good biopic, and it sounds really interesting, especially after watching Ford versus Ferrari last night. I'm very much in the mood for like a race movie or a car movie.
Oh yeah, definitely check that out. You know, if let's see if it's, I'm curious if it's on, where to watch it. It might be on Netflix actually. Looks like it's on Netflix and awesome. Amazon Prime.
Awesome. Okay, I have both of those.
Yeah,
services.
So you should be able to find it on one or the other. You know, and again, like, it's going back to Ford versus Ferrari, just kind of, for me, just having, you know, like, the story behind, like, the legendary GT40, you know, the car that ended up, the only American-made car that beat Ferrari at the Le Mans 24-hour, you know, ever, period. As long as they've been running this race, only American car. I'm sorry?
So you were familiar with the story before the movie?
Yeah, well, I was familiar with the story of the car, not necessarily, you know, some of Carroll Shelby's background, but I didn't realize, you know, the full story, you know, the story of I'm blanking out on his name, Miles.
Ken Miles?
Ken Miles. I didn't really know, like, First of all, I didn't know he died testing the damn thing, you know. Spoiler alert. Yeah,
spoiler alert. That came out of nowhere in the movie too. It was, and his son was watching, and that was traumatic.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily 100% true to life, but in either case, like, you know, that really, I was just like, oh shit, like that hurt me. But, you know, I think it helped kind of really establish, you know, Ford's like Mustang brand. And, you know, I guess that's why it means so much to like fans of the vehicle.
Ford did not come out looking great in the movie, though. And that surprised me, that I expected Ford to really just look good in the movie. And they didn't. That made Ford look awful.
Yeah, it's funny because it definitely felt like Ford was the antagonist throughout the movie.
It really felt like Ford was the antagonist, and I thought it was going to be like a David versus Goliath story, and instead the Ford was the Goliath.
It's definitely not. It wasn't what I expected, but at the same time, I was very, very pleased with the overall result. I think it was a phenomenal movie. I think Ford versus Ferrari is one of those movies that we're going to hear, you know, name dropped when it comes to Oscar season.
I don't know. This has been a really strong year, so I guess we're just going to have to see. Like, it's been a really strong year for performances.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you on that. You know, speaking of Ford, so this week was the week of launches. You know, we had Disney Plus, we had Google Stadia, and in the car world, Ford announced their first production electric crossover vehicle. And what's controversial about it is that they chose to call it the Mustang Mach-E.
I can see why, though. When you think Ford, the Mustang's for the first thing that comes to mind. So they're going to try to at least sell it on name recognition, mm-hmm, to some degree.
Yeah, I think I think what's happened is the Mustang name and the Mustang emblem mean something very different in today's world. So, you know, in the days of Ford versus Ferrari, it meant performance and, you know, kind of like the sports car, right? Like it was a coupe, you know, it was a convertible. It was about being young and traveling, like, you know, going on that road trip. That world doesn't exist, and it hasn't existed since realistically the 70s. You know, now...
Well, it's still a good... It still exists on the higher end of Mustangs, though, because you still have like the GT500, which is...
Oh, for sure. But, you know, but you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's the higher end stuff. So like the Mustang means something when you're willing to put down like 60 grand, 70 grand, 80 grand.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, like when you're putting down that kind of money, then it means something, which makes sense that this Mach-E starts at, you know, $44,000. It's a, you know, crossover, all electric. The GT model is roughly $61,000. And again, it's a luxury vehicle with a Mustang name. And I think that's smart. But I also understand why a lot of like diehard fans are like, this is not a Mustang. And it's not a Mustang for them. And I think that's what people need to understand. Like, but like you said, it's totally about name recognition. And out of fairness, this is exactly what GM should have did when they came out with an electric vehicle. At the very least, I can say that Ford looked at Tesla and said, you know what people want? People want a status symbol that happens to be an electric vehicle. It makes them feel better about blowing that much money and creating that big of a carbon footprint for a new ride.
That part is true. I still think Chevy could have done so much better with the Bolt, though.
Without a doubt. I mean, what they should have did is they should have did what BMW did. So BMW did the i8, which is like a sexy, electric roadster that looks like it came out of a Tron movie. But what they're really selling is the i3, which is a little, like, you know, Nissan Versa competitor.
I've actually seen a bunch of i3s though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what you sell. Like, the i3 is the refrigerator, but the i8 is the thing that gets you into the showroom.
You know, that's completely fair. I'd never thought about that before.
Yeah, it's like why do companies want to own luxury imprints, right? Like, so Volkswagen owns Porsche. You'll always, like, gawk at a Porsche, but if you own a Volkswagen, you're not going to be disappointed. You're like, hey, got a Jetta. I'm going to the store. I'm going to work. Works just fine.
Just as a fan of electric cars, I would like to see more people actually complete with the Leaf, because the Leaf's killed it in its market segment, like a very entry level of commuter electric car. And I would like to see more of that, because even the Model 3 is a lot more expensive than Musk and originally said it was going to be.
Yeah. No, I think, honestly, there's two things that are gonna push electric vehicles. The first one, I feel like I've been saying this for years now, but the infrastructure needs to happen. Tesla, you know, did the smart thing, which was, okay, we built a car, and now we're building powering stations all throughout the country along major highways. Why? Because people will want to drive this thing, and they're not going to just want to drive this as a commuter vehicle. So you have to make it so that somebody, you can potentially charge during your road trip. So makes sense. That's exactly what needs to happen. But I think standardizing things will be helpful. Like, so for example, you know, I believe Audi's e-tron charging station is different from Tesla's, which might be different from Nissan's. You know, that's a problem, because you can't build charging stations for individual, you know, car manufacturers. It's like gas stations, you know, like you drive a Hyundai, I drive a Kia, and somebody might drive a Chevy. But when we pull into, like, you know, the BP station, you know, it's the same nozzle. It's the same function. So I think that's where we need to get to before electric vehicles take off. Like, I want to see it happen, but until we get there, I don't see how it can be done.
I would like to see more federal regulation step in to help do more to combat help wean us off of fossil fuels. But I also understand that's not going to happen. So
yeah, at least not in the next four to six years.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of wraps us up, Paul. Is there anything else that we didn't cover?
I don't know. We have to cover something else, because we just ended on a really bad note if we end there.
Yeah.
Like, we have to say something else.
I got to say, you know what? I'm going to see the Rockettes tomorrow. There you go.
Okay, that's awesome. Have you ever done that before?
I've never seen the Rockettes. I've never done the Christmas show that they do every year. This will be the first time.
But anyway, I think that's it. That is it, ending on a better note now.
There you go. So, all right. We're going to do the quick final rundown. So again, thank you everyone for tuning in for this episode. Be sure to check us out on social media. We're at Noisecast on Facebook, Twitter. We're at The Noisecast on Instagram. You can also find me at Al_WRITE on Twitter. Paul, where can they find you?
I'm at Combs Paul on Twitter.
Awesome. And also, we're gonna be pushing this a lot more in 2020. But, you know, be sure to check out our Patreon, or tell some of your moneyed friends about our Patreon effort. It helps us keep this podcast going. It pays for things like hosting. It pays for us to get to events. It allows us to do just an overall better job at bringing this to you guys. You know, as a friend of the show, like aside from our gratitude, you help us keep the lights on. So that's very appreciated. Paul, anything else you want to leave with people?
Go see Parasite.
Go see Parasite. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. Paul, thank you as always, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.